You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. Please search for Fakeologist Audio Chat and Fakeologist Main Show on your favorite podcast app. To connect to our always on and always streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. To listen to the live stream, go to fake11.com/radio2. Now, on with the audio chat.
All right. We're in the live stream on Monday, September 19th, 2022, with last night's guest, Rolt. Rolt has pulled up. He wants more.
I didn't know I was signing up for more. I thought I was just like getting into Discord.
You're in Discord. This is where I chat in the daytime during my day job when I'm tooling around town. So I'm in and out. If you see me muted, that's because I can't talk right now because I'm in and out doing stuff. But we still capture a lot of great audio here. We've got almost 1,200 audio chats, average length 3 hours. So do the math. That's a year's worth of talking, probably, of solid 24/7 talking. I don't know how many hours are in a year, but there's a lot.
8760, if I remember right. Let's see. Let's do the math.
Oh,
yeah. 365, 24 times that. Yeah, 8760. Yep.
Oh, very good. So if we do 3 hours times 1,200, that's 3,600.
Yeah.
A year's worth of yapping, because some of them are even much longer. We had a 16-hour one as well. So this is where we are, and it's very random. We're actually broadcasting live around the world with my setup. So if people want to tune in, they can hear this live, and it's being recorded. So right, just a heads up. That's why we're here. So you were saying something really interesting that you've actually corresponded with the Unabomber. What do you think of the Unabomber? Because I'll tell you what I think. I think it's just a construct, and there's no such person. It's just another intelligence front for disseminating and gathering information.
It could be. What I can say is that the letters that I got from the guy are handwritten, and they are in the same handwriting as every other letter I've actually seen from anybody else who ever corresponded with the guy. And it's very interesting. I mean, basically, you send letters to it's been a number of years since I corresponded with him. So, but basically, I was sending them to U.S. Penitentiary Max in Florence, Colorado. And it's just like a
Max. Max.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big time.
That's where all the PSYOP killers and bombers go.
They're all in the same
place.
He ended up being. He was with Timothy.
Have we ever seen a group photo?
No.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I don't think Flomax exists. There might be a building, but I don't think anyone's in there.
Really?
I think that's where all the PSYOP killers and bombers and destroyers are, but. I just don't think, I think they're all intelligence fronts. These are all intelligence stories.
That's part of the dialectic. Yeah, it's possible that that's what's going on.
But you've got evidence with handwriting, which is cool.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to have letters, and they're postmarked from Florence, Colorado and everything else. So, it's interesting.
What kind of things did you talk about? Can you post those, Would that be immoral? No, I have
scans of them. There's nothing private about any of that stuff. You're putting stuff through the prison system, so it's understood that everything that you're writing is read by other people. And so, no, I've shared them with other people over the years. I have scans of them on my computer somewhere. If I dig around,
could you send me some of them and I'll put them up? That would be cool.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, I think my question basically after I finished school, I started having like these kind of questions, like what the hell are we doing being engineers in the first place? Because, What is technology for? Why are we doing this? Why is it going in certain directions? You know, it's like, these are the kind of questions I was really struggling with back in like 2005, 6, 7, that time frame, really starting to wonder, what is all this stuff for? Because first of all, you recognize that there's a lot of people who are on antidepressants and
After the break, we got breaks every 20 minutes on it.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Now we're back. Myself just and like Rolf from Idaho. Every 20 minutes, there's a bumper break. You're going to hear a beep, beep, beep.
Okay.
And then you got to wait, because if you do, you can talk, but it won't be recorded during the break.
Okay.
So if you're talking or playing music, the break, the bumper will replace the audio.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, what I was saying is, I think back in that time frame, 2005, 2000, I don't know, I was probably like really thinking about this all the way up through maybe like 2010 or 12, but I was super curious, like what was driving technology, right? And so you basically start digging around, and it turns out that, oh my God, you know, nobody talks about this, but Jesus, people have been thinking about this stuff for 150 years, you know? And so you run into like Jacques Ellul's, the Technological Society and Propaganda. And then you, from there, you find, I don't know, I have a lot of these books are in boxes that I don't have anymore just sitting here, but... You know,
by the way, before you go on, let me just quickly interrupt, because my brain has really got, I've got a bad memory. I want to tell you before you went on that if you could put those email scans onto the Fakeologist forums, you can upload them yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want to do that, put them there and just start a thread under, just find the proper topic wherever it is. And just start a thread. That would be fascinating stuff. I think that's really cool that you've got those.
Yeah.
Now, can I just? What did the Unabomber do? What did he? Did he kill anybody?
Oh yeah, yeah. He definitely killed, I think, like 3 people and injured quite a few more with his mail bombs. So I know.
I couldn't remember.
There's at least one professor who is maimed as a consequence. He's still like a working professor someplace. But the basic story is that Ted Kaczynski was a super genius. He grew up in Chicago. He went to Harvard as a 16-year-old, and then after that, he graduates from that whole thing at like age 20, and then gets his PhD from the University of Michigan by the time he's something like 24. And then if I remember right, he went to UC Berkeley to become a professor. And I think he became like the youngest professor of mathematics in the history of UC Berkeley. So he was clearly on a very high flying kind of mathematical trajectory. And it turns out also that he appears to have been part of like MK Ultra experiments when he was at Harvard. That's a little aside that you, that's like a rat hole you can go down into. It's pretty interesting. At where, they were doing some pretty, you know, messing with your mind type stuff. So anyhow, I think that I have to think where I read this stuff, if it was his own writing or if it was other books about him that I read. But nevertheless, he recognized that he did not want to be a professor, that basically he just wanted to go off and live in the wilderness, because he was having like serious questions about technology himself and had come to some relatively clear conclusions about it very early in his life. And so working at UC Berkeley was more or less like, I am going to save up enough money to go live in the mountains of Montana in a little shack sort of thing. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, I think he was only a professor there for 2-3 years, takes off, moves to Montana, builds himself a really rudimentary shack in the woods, and just starts living this really, really basic.
By the way, that shack, which I think is just a literary narrative device.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's in the Smithsonian, and it's ridiculous if you believe that. I think they closed that wherever it was.
Is that right? Yeah.
I can't remember.
I may be a normie. I may be a normie when it comes to this stuff, like taking it like way too literally. But nevertheless, I'll just tell you what I, you know, this is how how I dealt with it. I'm certainly, you know, I'm like one of these guys who's pretty open to having his mind changed. And so, so the story, like what turned the Unabomber into the Unabomber is more or less that he used to go on long hikes and visit various places. And, you know, he was aware of like this really beautiful valley or something along those lines that was some number of miles from where he lived. And one day he goes out there, expecting to see this beautiful area. And it turns out that the entire thing had been clear cut. And I think there was kind of like inside of him, there was like this sense that, vengeance must somebody has to pay for this. Somebody has to pay for having destroyed this absolutely like pristine, beautiful old growth area that he just loved so much. And I mean, like, I think like that was like the trigger that turned him from being like somebody who was
sounds
just,
extremely
like,
cliche.
Yeah, it does. That's a good point. Yep.
Everything sounds like it sounds like a cartoon character situation. And actually, do you know Miles Mathis?
Oh yeah, sure.
I think he wrote about the guy. I don't even know what he said. Do you?
No, I don't actually. But that'd be worth reading for sure.
Because Miles Mathis is pretty much everything is fake, and everything goes back to the black nobility / Jewish families, the Khazarians. Mm-hmm. That's really the message I get out of Miles Mathis. So he probably is going to say that Kaczynski, the name and all that, is tied into some kind of royalty or elite family structure.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess.
Yeah. So maybe, okay. So maybe I really did play into, you know, just the total narrative here and so on. And but anyway, the thing is like, ultimately I bought this book of collected writings that had been put out by a professor at some university in Michigan, if I remember right. And I read that book. I thought it was interesting, and I actually wrote to the professor and told him a little bit about my background. And he said, "Oh, because you're a technologist, Kaczynski would probably take you seriously." And I actually have a PhD in mechanical engineering. So the thing is like,
you are smart.
The normal. And so, yeah, anyway, so he, yeah, when I wrote him, it really didn't take long before he wrote.
You might be the smartest fakeologist type we've ever had.
Oh, give me a break.
Were you sent here? Are we finally getting traction 10 years later? We've attracted some big minds.
Oh my God. Yeah.
To blow us up.
Yeah. I don't think so, because I'm like a self-employed guy. I just happen to be, you know, I can tell you this. When I was in grad school, I've told this story to lots of people over the years. There's one student who, he found this interesting kind of like psychographic survey or something like that. I can't remember really all what the questions were, but it was something like 50 or 100 questions. And our lab was huge. There's like 20 students or something working in the lab, and he got all of us to take it. And then he plot this thing up on a 2D graph. And I just remember that everybody else in the lab was clustered in a very small area.
Turn
of the graph. And then there was me. It was way on the other side.
Yeah.
So that's why I never fit in. That's why I didn't. I never had.
You were a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, I was not meant to be a professor or go work in a national lab or do all the other things that theoretically you'd be able to do with the background.
Were you? Did you graduate when you were really young too? Are you in a
no,
genius level?
No, definitely not. No, I didn't graduate until my late 20s.
You did the hard work route.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's the yeah, I never was like a very brilliant scientist. I think I just had like the perseverance to kind of like stick through it. And I liked the subject, you know. So I definitely wasn't like I was not selected, you know. There were other people who got the big fellowships and big scholarships and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. That's interesting. So that's always been my thought, but maybe you can maybe you have evidence to the contrary that Kaczynski is a real person that really belongs in Flomax. But I think all these Supermax, like you'd think that people do get released out of jail for good behavior, or they at least have hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that none of these Flomax maximum security characters that are involved in national stories, including in Canada, you never see them again ever. Not even a picture, not even a postcard. So to me, that makes it extremely suspicious that they are nothing more than just a narrative of the intelligence fronts that are owned by the elite.
That's how
I've always thought about these people.
Yeah.
We have a guy that allegedly, back in the days when women were being grabbed off the street and tortured and raped, you remember those storylines?
Mm-hmm.
We had our very own in Canada. And the guy's name was Paul Bernardo. Then he changed his name, which is also sort of, a tip-off that there's some legal manipulation going on with the story to cement it as fiction. But we've never seen him ever. He apparently comes up for parole, but we never see him. Like if anyone's really in prison and needs a hearing, it should be in public.
Yeah.
We're not a secret society. Hold on one second.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because I know that even that professor who collected all of Kaczynski's writings into that book, I think everything was just done as correspondence. I don't think he ever traveled to the prison and got to meet with him in person. That's actually pretty interesting. I should actually follow up with him and ask him about that.
Ever seen these Supermax maximum security prisoners. And if we're supposed to be this liberal, humane country like Canada's made out to be, do we really think solitary confinement for 25 years is humane? Like I used to be a capital punishment guy back in the day, but now I know because I don't trust the state, I wouldn't allow capital punishment anywhere from anybody, because I just don't, I don't trust the state at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just no way we could have that, even if there were real killers, because I just don't trust the state, because we know the state lies and the police lie.
Yeah, absolutely.
The structure is corrupt. Now it's been revealed. They go along with psyops and hoaxes. If we have a police chief, and every major city has one that goes along with psyops and hoaxes and is a member of fraternal order that swears secrets above and beyond the society that they're working in, then forget it. I don't trust them. You can't. Yeah. It's over.
Yeah. But it's also, I also just think that, the whole system of justice that you have, quote justice, is ludicrous, because it's like, listen, if Apple decided to get in some argument with Google or Samsung or some other big tech company and basically says, okay, Samsung, hey, we're taking you to court, we're taking you to Apple court, the judge works for us, the prosecutor works for us, and also the guys who collected all the evidence work for us, and these guys are and they all collect paychecks from us, and the thing is, court, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you walk into court and there's the judge, there's the DA, there's the police who are testifying, and
they're all brothers.
They all get their freaking paycheck from the same place. It's like, this is ludicrous. Yeah. This is kangaroo, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I agree. And most people don't know that. That's why if you try and represent yourself, they don't want you there, because they're going to say, well, you don't know the rules, you're just going to disrupt. But actually, you don't know you're not part of the game. That's the problem. Oh, wow. That's the real problem. That's why they don't want you there, because you're not read in to the script.
Right. I mean, is that British accredited registry or whatever? Is that real?
Yeah.
Is that really a thing?
Well, there is a thing called the bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I think I agree with you. I even think there's a parallel. I think there is in every courthouse, in every county, in every major country, there are PSYOP courts and PSYOP judges for phony cases.
Huh.
I think every court has a courtroom, maybe a virtual courtroom with a virtual judge. And there are certain lawyers or pretend lawyers. They execute all the psyops for every... There's one of these set up everywhere. Mm. We even had a guy... We even had a judge. I was looking up some story here because now I'm trying to look at all stories in Canada and Toronto to look for fakery, just going back. There was even a judge in Toronto and his name was Ian No Hammer. And I thought, oh man, is that a play on words? Is that a real judge? No Hammer.
Yeah.
As in, he doesn't have the gavel have that the gavel. Judge bangs. No, so I think, is this a real guy? Because there's not, he doesn't have any real internet presence, which, you know, if he's 60 or 70 years old, that's not surprising. But I'm just curious because we know that the OJ trial was fake. That was done in a television studio, or it might have been in the PSYOP courtroom in the LA County building, but I still think it was a show. And most of the court cases that were on the television were, I would say, they're phony, they're fake.
Yeah.
But people describe them as real. And they did really create create a dialectic in the public. That for sure. We talk about dialectics. They really did create a, but they're just made to influence opinion and real laws. But that's my theory, that there is a parallel system in all systems. It's literally their TV production.
Are you still there?
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Okay. You're back.
I'm back.
Yeah.
What do you think of that theory?
Well, I think it's interesting. I'm kind of curious if, do fake courts create real precedents?
Yeah. It creates real. I don't know if they can refer to these cases. Maybe they can. Maybe they do. Because like you said, it's a private system. The court system is like Walmart or Apple making these policies. I think they're just policies, really.
Yeah.
Because even though there's a law, they even say the court system is based on case law. So there's a law. The bar judges the law. They make a case. And that becomes the basis for future judgments. Mm-hmm. So they make a case based on the law. So you're not really getting, you don't get judged by the law. You get judged by the interpretation of the law, which is the case.
Yeah. And I mean, like, not only do you get done by the interpretation, you also get done by Black's Law Dictionary, apparently, where words don't mean what you think they do.
Yeah. We got a member here called SMJ who used to be a lawyer who couldn't stand the craft. He's a fakeologist that gardens, but he knows his stuff. Maybe he could speak better to that. He listens to all these audios. So SMJ, if you're listening, make a comment and we'd love to hear it. See what you say. He's our legal expert.
Yeah. Could use it right now. Yeah. So I don't know what to make out of a lot of things. I mean, I think that you see a lot of trials that are out there that they certainly have hints that they aren't real, you know. Or something's kind of goofy about them, but I don't know. I haven't gotten myself pulled down into that hole too deep yet.
I just invited SMJ. See if he'll come in. Sometimes he's around. He might come in. He might not. And yeah, we have different forums here where you can type messages. Two or three of them. Mm-hmm. After the break.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is Resmut Jeff from the Yakima Valley, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.
Those are called bumpers. If you want to do a bumper like that, you're welcome to.
Okay. Very cool.
You can do it now if you want.
Yeah, I think maybe not. Not right now.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
I'm not even sure I have a voice for radio, let alone a face.
You do, so. Actually. You got a really good voice for radio. And I'm the ultimate
amateur of that. Yeah.
Oh boy, okay.
Yeah, you got a good voice for that. Go for it, man.
So anyway, you know, like just to touch back on Kaczynski a little bit more. So
let's get back to him. Yeah,
I'll just push this just a little bit farther. So the guy who collected all that writing told me to reach out to him, and then I just posed some questions to him. And I think at that stage in my life, I still was kind of like toying around with like libertarian ideas about certain kinds of things. And Kaczynski really chopped all that stuff to pieces and basically said, you are living in like an old, you know, like you're promoting ideas that are just totally illusory. So I'll try to find those scans and post them up for you so you can read.
How many letters did you get?
I have three letters from him. Yeah.
And
they're all long. They're all pretty long. Yeah.
What did you ask him about?
It was just I'm trying to understand technology, why it's happening, why are things being promoted, why are certain kinds of directions the ones you know, like why does technology go in certain ways instead of other ways? Why is it that people aren't happier? You know, you think like, okay, the way that everything is promoted to you is like, okay, here's this shiny new thing that you can put in your pocket, okay? It does amazing things. It's going to save you time. It's going to save you money. It's going to make it possible for you to do all kinds of things that you weren't able to do before. You know, all those things may be true to a certain extent, but the reality is like nobody seems to have any more time. I'm pretty freaking certain that your average levels of happiness in this, you know, at the time that we're living right now are not higher than they were in, say, 1750 or 1550, or just pick a number in the past. I don't think like people are generally happier today than they used to be. And so if it's not serving our interests in that regard, then why are we bothering with technology at all? You know, and then, you know, so. These are kind of like the overarching questions that I'm trying to get more specific answers to. I mean, I don't have copies of the letters that I sent to Kaczynski myself, and so I don't remember exactly what my questions were. I just have the letters that he sent back to me.
Well, still, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I should have kept copies of those. That would have been a lot smarter.
How many people have letters from Kaczynski? And you say you matched up the writings.
You can look online. There's quite a few people who've corresponded with him over the years, and the handwriting is just, he writes in block letters, and it's very
block letters, as in it can be copied by multiple different people that are playing a role.
Is it
letters to Santa?
It's very distinctive block letters, though. I would say that it doesn't look. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. It's definitely not like a beautiful cursive hand or something like that. That's really
as a matter of fact. When Santa came to our house, I noticed that our Santa Claus wrote in block letters. Very neat block letters. It wasn't me. So
yeah, and it was very neat. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So if it was a script or cursive, as they call it. I never called handwriting cursive, but that's what they call it now. I don't know why. Back in the day, it just said you had to write it instead of print. We said writing and printing. But well, you know, apparently they call it cursive now.
There's some esoteric meaning behind all that stuff, apparently. And I this is yet another place that I've thought is kind of interesting, but I haven't gone down it. But the idea of spelling being having to literally to do with casting spells, and also cursive being like putting curses on something. I think there's something to that, that those are actually where those terms are actually coming from when it comes to like the use of words. So, It's my doc in the UK who kind of like brought that up with me one day, but I didn't really go down that.
Yeah. Spelling, yeah. Cursive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's something going on there.
But you just gave me a clue that if they're block letters, then A, it could even be, did you measure them to the in the sense that it looked like computer generated printing?
They look like they're just written in ballpoint ink, but No, I mean, like maybe you could actually just do like a statistical analysis on them and find out whether these things are actually written by a machine, you know?
Well, what is the typesetting description when you discuss the spacing between letters? I can't remember what that's called. I remember when I was using PageMaker 25 years ago, there's so many settings for typesetting. Mm-hmm. There's just different words to describe how close the different letters are.
Isn't it kerning or something like that?
Kerning, yeah, that's it, kerning. I'm wondering if, for instance, the space between two letters is the same throughout his letters, which would indicate that it was made on a computer.
That'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, if you put them online, we can study them.
There you go.
I just think you're writing the Santa Claus.
It could well be.
But why? Even if you're in jail, can't someone do a jailhouse interview? What's the big deal? Let's have one. Why haven't all the media gone for the? If he's so smart, why not a jailhouse interview? Why not a jailhouse interview with any of these Supermax people?
Yeah.
If there really is a guy that murdered schoolgirls in Canada, why don't we, if we're going to keep him alive and we're going to pay to keep him alive, why don't we figure out what's in his brain before we kill him or before he dies? Wouldn't that be interesting? No, because he doesn't exist. Not in there. It's all BS. Either that or we don't really live in a civil society. And we really want to just lock him in a hole and let him rot. Yeah. Which, if we are really being run by liberals and people that think the best of people, and people think we should share and blah, 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 then you'd think there would be some kind of investigation or some humanitarian grounds, or maybe he's reformed, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe ask, you know, since we're so big on letting the victims talk, maybe we could ask the victim's family, what do you think? Would he be... What if we had him working on some hard problems? Maybe he could help mine cryptocurrency. If he's so smart, why are we wasting a valuable resource? Let's put him to work for the state. We used to have the chain gang. Okay, what about the digital chain gang? He could solve some societal problems. Maybe he could perfect the communitarian plan of anything, you know?
That's pretty funny.
It doesn't make sense.
That's interesting because, you know, Kaczynski, the writings are all, you can't really categorize him as left or right, but it's definitely towards he definitely has tremendous disdain for liberals in general and just leftists. If you read the, what's it called? It's what he put into like the New York Times or wherever, Washington Post or wherever that stuff.
Well, that was part of the thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So what if you read that whole essay, he really rips them to pieces. But at the same time, he's basically saying like conservatives aren't doing anything valuable either, you know. But he has like a little bit more disdain for the one than the other. So, So I don't know. Does that just serve the interests of the state by just showing you that people who kind of like hold these more right wing out there views are actually just totally toxic people, and you know this is why we have to put them in prison or something along those lines? I really don't know.
Well, it's to further a narrative. It's to control the Timothy McVeigh was created to just be the dialectical extreme right. to shape a narrative that has some kind of preventative communitarian laws of the future. Yeah, they want to avoid a guy like that, so they create him.
Kaczynski and McVeigh ended up being, if not in the same cell, like in the same cell block, and came to know each other, supposedly. So
him and McVeigh, Kaczynski and McVeigh?
Yeah.
That makes
for interesting. that's an interesting friendship, I suppose. You know, at least kind of like no matter how you read it, real, fake, whatever, it's all kind of funny.
Even the Oklahoma City bombing was just a precursor to 9/11. That was, I think, everything was the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same storyline, same ridiculous. Half explosion. That one was a half explosion.
Yeah.
And it was also an urban land clear. I think they took down all the buildings in that area, like they did at the World Trade Center. So they were all demolished.
Is that right?
And then they had the inverted wave pool, which is some occultic symbolism where the water pours into the ground, into this black hole. It's the same as, they're both the same.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, give me, there's something you said yesterday on the show that I thought was interesting. I've heard the nukes are fake kind of argument, but I've not dug, you know, like I kind of get like the footage from, you know, like the World War II type timeline, or maybe even after 1950s above ground tests, that there's problems there. But what's the short synopsis on how nuclear power stations are not real? What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I'm not. Are you an electrical engineer? Did you say?
No, mechanical.
Okay. Well, you're probably pretty close to an electrical engineer in the terms of understanding. I'm guessing maybe.
Well, they're pretty distinct fields. I mean, like, you learn a little bit of electrical engineering, but I certainly am not like somebody who's going to be off designing, like, you know, Intel's newest processors, that's for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. my take is this. I think they're fake. I think nuclear science is fake, all the way back to Madame Curie, which you can contract her name into Mercury, which is why they picked that phony name.
Huh.
So I think they're all literary devices, the naming and the storylines, and there's a corny story about her husband, and it's just, they're all emotional coded stories. But mm-hmm. I think nuclear science is fake. I think there's no such thing as isotopes. I don't believe there are radioactive isotopes. I don't believe in magic rocks. I don't believe in any of that narrative. So I don't believe there are radioactive hot rocks like uranium, and if they enrich that into what, U-235 by adding a neutron or a proton, I just don't think it, to me, it's alchemy.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think there are magic rocks. And the heart of a nuclear reactor are magic rocks, where they pack the magic rocks into rods, and interlaced into those faggots. They're faggots, a bundle of stuff.
Right, I get where you're going. Okay.
Interlaced in those faggots are lead rods, which are supposed to absorb the radioactive process, where the magic rocks are throwing off protons, which would go to their neighboring faggot bundle and cause that to create a continuing, ongoing radioactive reaction, chain reaction, I guess they call, where, you know, the next door throws off the proton, the next one, it becomes an out of control radioactive reaction, save for the lead rods interlaced within the uranium rods, which if you insert and pull out these rods, can control the rate of radioactive chain reaction, which can control the level of heat, which can control the whole output of the nuclear power plant. So they have to have a way to control the heat source. And by that, they, I believe, just by inserting and taking out the rods, the lead rods that impede the radioactive reaction.
Okay.
But if you don't believe any of, if you don't believe in radioactivity, as told by Magic Rocks, then the whole thing you have to ask, well, what exactly is happening in these plants? Is anything happening in the plants?
What are Geiger counters picking up then?
Well, I think there is some kind. I think there is natural radiation. And okay. I think there is some kind of natural emissions from certain material.
Uh-huh.
But they never really were too convincing to me. To me, they're just more props. And really, my basis is really unscientific. And the way I came to it is when I found out that 9/11 was a hoax.
Yeah.
The only thing that that convinced me of, the only thing I really took away from that is true, that I am absolutely certain about, is that you can fool the whole world and you can't do anything about it. So if the whole world is convinced of a lie, then there's nothing you can do. You can't undo it. You can't change anyone's minds. By the time enough people come to the realization, then it's too late. All the laws, all the institutions have been put in place, and it would be pretty difficult to unravel it.
That's a really interesting take on it. You know, just to follow up with that idea that you're just throwing out there, I've been thinking about this for, I don't know, at least as long as COVID was around, but COVID just fits perfectly into the mold that more or less every major thing that they want you to believe is not verifiable on your own.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't go do tests on the steel from 9/11 because they turned it into Chinese rebar immediately, you know?
That's what they said, yeah.
At least that's the story, right? Okay. You don't have the ability to go take temperature measurements from all around the world and collect that data for 150 years or something like that. And you have no means to verify this story.
You can't go to the schoolhouse in Sandy Hook or Uvalde because they say, well, it's just so painful. We have to destroy it to get rid of it. Yeah. Well, let's destroy a crime scene. Because it's too painful for anyone to look into it. See, that is completely counter to their own rules and regulations.
Yeah.
And that's enough to really, to me, discount the whole story. But anyway, after 9/11, I just started punching in anything in hoax, anything that I was afraid of or fearful of. And I thought, wow, nuclear has always been a thought of mine, even though for the longest time after, say, the 60s, they stopped talking about it. Mm-hmm. How did it stop being a problem? Which I found puzzling. So I looked into it, and I just typed in nuke hoax, and I found a movie by Jesse Waugh on YouTube where he just went over the footage that they say is evidence of a nuclear bomb. And he was just showing all the anomalies and the fact that it was most likely even a model that they were blowing up in the movie, which they say is real evidence of this damage. I just thought, wow, if nuclear bombs are fake, which makes sense because it's a really good psychological tool for the elite to control wars. They can control wars between countries that are traditionally slaughtering each other. And if they want to, say, slow the slaughter or put it off for a more convenient time or in a more controlled way, they could just say, okay, India, you have nuclear warheads, and so does Pakistan. Because those people probably really do hate each other based on religious differences.
Yeah.
So then they can control those two countries and just control the whole situation with this idea that, well, one has, you guys both have these nation-destroying weapons, so you better calm down. After the break.
Hi, I'm Jessica Gal. top-notch energy.
Dr. Fusterclucker.
Gord from Manitoba.
Fake Egg from Sweden.
You're listening to Fakeologist Radio at Fakeologist.com.
Yeah, so that's why I thought, okay, well, if that's fake, then what about all the nuclear science? What about nuclear power plants? Because they're always, they're another complete contradiction. We're told that they are the cleanest, safest energy, yet the nuclear waste is so dangerous that we don't know what to do with it. We have nowhere to put it, and it's such a problem that we really can't promote nuclear power.
So, yeah, actually, here's something. I've wondered about this. Okay, imagine. Okay, so basically, you say you have like all this uranium that's out in the desert someplace, right? You dig a big mine to pull this uranium out of the ground, and so all this radiation was you had tons of radiation that was apparently in this ore.
They enrich the ore. No. Uranium's inert.
But listen, but this is the thing. It's like, okay, so now you go off and use this stuff. What prevents you from undoing the process, oxidizing this stuff, and then mixing it back with the tailings of everything else that you got rid of and putting it right back in the ground where you got it from?
Mm-hmm.
No, like, is that going to destroy the environment too? I mean, if you dilute this stuff down to kind of like background levels, just like the way it was previously, I don't know. Is it somehow drastically more poisonous or worse now that it's been reacted? I have no idea. But I mean, like, I've wondered these kind of things because they're always telling you, like, oh, nothing can, you know, the half lives of this stuff is 100,000 years, 500 million years or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be radioactive for longer than humans exist on this planet.
Yeah. You know, and then we see the Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We were told that those places would be uninhabitable for hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
Yeah.
And then you see pictures of them, and you see they're completely modern, grown-up cities. And
hey, they look better than Detroit.
That was the image that I put on my blog. Which city was bombed by the Americans? You see a picture of Detroit, where for some bizarre reason they leave their empty industrial buildings standing. I never understood that. So they become tourist attractions for people that like to go in old, unsafe buildings.
Right.
And then you see pictures of Japan, which completely modern. There's no evidence of any lingering radioactivity. And the people they put before us that are we're told are damaged by radiation look like actors and fakers as well. So here we go again with more fakery.
Yeah, I've definitely heard the theory that what happened with Japan was very much similar to what happened to Dresden. I mean, just like it's literally incendiary bombing. Exactly.
Yeah. Why don't we ever talk about Dresden when it comes to World War II? You know, maybe we'll get back to your other letter writing campaign to Alfred Schaefer, because I went down that rabbit hole too, which is also pretty cool. You seem to be a prolific letter writer, which is interesting.
I realize, I only have this one life here, right? And so,
yeah, it's great.
I'm not interested in it, everybody's like, oh, you're going to end up on the list. It's like, you're already on the list. I'm on the list. We're on the list. You're on the list. That's all there's to it, right?
A list for what?
Yeah. So where's the downside, you know?
I thought if nuclear power is fake.
Yeah.
And I live near a nuclear power plant. I actually swim beside one. I could swim over to it if there wasn't barbed wire in the water, which I think there is now after 9/11. They put about four extra fences on it. They bought a Hummer that I've seen drive down to the gas station. It runs out of gas, but I think it gets about 1 mile per gallon or less. So I've seen them pushing it. So I've always been somewhat afraid of the thing, and I thought maybe it's a dumb idea to buy a house around there, because what happens if the place lights up? They have 11 warning stations around my house. Interesting number, 11, that sound off if there's a problem. And you're supposed to take KI, potassium iodine.
Right. Do they issue everybody KI?
They do, I think. I think you have to ask for it. They never mailed it to me. But then I thought, well, and I've watched the plant. I've driven by it. I took a tour of the plant, actually, or of the of the information center. You can't go in the plant anymore after 9/11. You know, for security.
Yeah.
For security's sake, it's a great cover. It's a great cover, so they never have to let people in there, so they can do anything they want now, even though it's publicly or was publicly financed.
Yeah.
I always thought, man, is this place dangerous? And then there weren't too many people talking about this. I found a couple people that were speculating. There was a Canadian guy, Roger Bonneville. I tried to get a hold of him, and he told me to F off, like he told everyone else. He didn't want to talk about it, but he was the one that was speculating on fakery around nuclear power. And the closest explanation I could get is their dump load facility.
What's that mean?
And it just means that at all times, the grid is over-energized by maybe 25%.
Oh, really?
Because if everyone goes to the kitchen to heat up the kettle at halftime, then that would put a strain on the grid if it was only had enough power for what was running. So they have to have it overcharged to avoid any kind of brownouts or blackouts.
Oh, my gosh. So basically, you need to have like a giant resistor that you can get rid of all this extra power. So that was actually going to be my next question. So what's the energy source that's blowing all these giant clouds of steam from the cooling towers? But there you go.
Where I live, I've never seen steam come out of these towers. Never.
Is that right?
Never. Now, for the longest time, I think we have 8 towers, 8 reactors. They always say that half of them are under construction, and I have seen absolutely no activity in the 20 years that I've lived by this one. Yeah. And it's an untouchable topic because half of my neighbors probably work there, and they all make 6 figures to keep quiet.
Yeah.
And even the firemen, they even have their own fire department. And I doubt they've ever put out a real fire. Maybe.
It's basically, you probably have like a... I don't know, 50,000 Sunbeam toasters all like hooked up in parallel or something like that.
No, I think they take power in. So what happens is...
No, that's what I'm saying. Literally, like basically you have a whole bunch of toasters that are taking power in and like burning it off there in those cooling towers.
Yeah, right. I would say, they probably have whatever electrical elements in the water. So they could potentially boil stuff off and then create steam and give the illusion... something happening there. But because we're in the Northeast grid, I think, and we've been told this, electricity is not a topic in Ontario anymore. They always used to talk about it, but now nobody talks about it. But if there's excess power, then they would just call their neighboring electrical authority and ask if they can send the power to, say, Michigan or New York State. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I remember in the past, those states would say, we'll take your power, but you have to pay us. So you'd have to pay us 2 cents a kilowatt hour
to
take it off your hands.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah, New York State has nuke plants on the other side of Lake Ontario.
Uh-huh.
I think Michigan has a plant in the Detroit River. But I just think that when they don't need the power, they have to dump it somewhere, especially if someone makes a mistake in the calculations. It's probably all computerized now.
Yeah.
But that's my theory. So I don't think they do anything. They take power in and boil it off when need be. But it's the only explanation for what's going on there. It's the only thing that explains all the contradictions that... We would all be using nuclear power now if it was real. There's no doubt in my mind. Because even their weak, contradictory stories that it's unsafe for the waste, it just doesn't make any sense. Like you said, you could do so many things probably with these magic rocks.
It's lots of technologies have what is it called? Like technological overhang. There's a you create a solution, and now the solution creates its own problems, right? And so, I mean, like that's a classic one. But the idea that you've had nuclear power here for, I don't know, 60, 70 years, I suppose, by now, and that this problem is just simply unsolvable. I mean, come on, really?
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's another thing that confirmed my cognitive confirmation bias. When I went on a tour of the information center is outside the walls, the three layers of fencing and barbed wire and armed guards and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I went there after I'd gone to Cape Canaveral to the Kennedy Space Station, where they showed us the control room for the Apollo moon missions.
Right. Okay.
And I just remember sitting there and they were showing this wall of computers and these desks that simulated the control room in Houston. And they were showing how old, they were all old banks of computers with lights and switches. And it was all really, okay, it was really dramatic. It was like a Disney World set because we always go to Disney World when we're down there. So it didn't look much different to me. And it was a really boring tour and the food was terrible there. I remember getting sick after eating in the grubateria. But so after that, I went to the nuclear power plant in Toronto, and they took us to the info center, and they rebuilt the control room for the nuclear power plant in the information center. And it looked exactly the same as the Apollo control center to me. I thought, wow, this looks so similar. And now the plant was built in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
That was when they started big time the fraud here. So it was in the 70s. Yeah. And I guess they were building computer systems from the 60s into the plant. And that was what's going to run the plant. And one of the things that the guy brought up, the tour guide, he brought it up. Nobody asked him any useful questions. I was a skeptic back then, but I wasn't sure. So I didn't really have anything to ask. I wanted to ask a couple direct questions, but I didn't think it would work too well there.
Yeah.
And he said, you're probably wondering, why do we have such old computers running the plant in the 2000s? 2010, yeah. I think I went there, 2015. And his answer was, well, it's because it works so well. Why would we change anything? You know, and okay, that's a, I guess, a really weak, plausible deniability. But on the other hand, as we all know, the computers break. You know, there's heat problems and parts break, and then you have to replace them because nobody makes the part anymore.
That's absolutely right. So, exactly. You can't. Well, I mean, the thing is, like, I can't get that tube anymore. You know.
Exactly. So you have to replace it. That's why we replace everything. Yeah. Cars, yeah. Computers, doesn't matter. Technology does move along. So his weak excuse that because it works so well that they really didn't upgrade anything, hardware or software.
Yeah.
And then, so I thought, that's a pretty lame excuse. How about because the whole thing is fake and it doesn't matter if it doesn't work because the whole thing is BS. That makes more sense to me.
That's hilarious.
Let me finish. There was a city council meeting that I went to because some guy asked a question because every 5 years they have a hearing. Do we extend the license of the plant another 5 years?
Okay.
And I went to one of those meetings and a young guy got up and asked the question, because the computer systems are so old, do you guys have them hooked up to the internet? And are they secure? Because every so many years, businesses have to conform to a standard of security for their computer systems. And since this is a very critical one, if something screws up, and man, he couldn't get a straight answer about why they are not upgrading their computer systems to conform to today's security standards. So I thought, wow, now I understand why they're lying about that, because they don't have any computer systems.
Yeah, maybe they don't write computer viruses on paper punch cards.
So I was going to ask the guy if he ever considered the whole thing was fake, but I couldn't get near him. But I was listening to the whole thing. Man, it's just another show where they come to town and there's no local experts. They always bring in nuclear physicists out of town or out of country. Because apparently we're too stupid here to have our own. So it's sort of an international scam.
Oh, it's like the Vatican.
It's internationally regulated.
So they send in a cardinal to come and basically deal with what the little peon priests can't do.
Yeah, Yeah, it's an international scam. So if they control it internationally, I think is the way they run it. So you don't really have to have any locals knowing anything at all. They all know they're just getting paid for. I don't think anyone ever quits their job there. And I don't even, I've never seen them hire.
Would you quit your job if they were paying you six figures to do nothing?
Yeah.
Me either.
And every time they want to close it, they think, oh, all these people are making so much money. If you multiply out what all these people make and what they do for the economy, we really can't close it. So just excuse after excuse why you can't close it down. And it's always on the water somewhere, usually, presumably help cool it. And that's why they're always on a lake or on an ocean. Yeah. And the one in Toronto is in prime real estate. And it's blocking a few miles of waterfront. And then, and everyone desires the waterfront when you live in a city on a lake like Toronto. So real estate. The idea that we need to keep this stupid eyesore on the Toronto waterfront is ridiculous. Because it is. It's ugly.
Yeah.
It looks, it's a 70s concrete mess.
Yeah.
That does nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so. It's like in California, you got San Quentin Prison right on the, I think it's in Marin County, if I remember right. And, taking up just enormous quantities of very, very prime real estate. And you just think to yourself, why do you have your death row inmates sitting in this lovely area in Marin County instead of out and why would you not just go, set up shop right next to Death Valley and do it out there, because this property here is worth probably like
billions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, they need probably more air conditioning in Death Valley, but yeah, so that's my theory. I have no proof at all. But on the other hand, they need to provide proof that it's doing something. I don't need to prove it doesn't do anything. They make the extraordinary claim. So they need extraordinary evidence to prove that it. And they always say, if you look on the charts, well, half of our energy in Ontario comes from nuclear. But again, there's no way to tell. We're plugged into a grid. We're plugged into Michigan, which has coal-fired plants. We're plugged into New York State. Our eastern side is plugged into Quebec with all their hydroelectric power. We're plugged in all over the place. There's no way to see where power comes from.
Yep.
At all.
Yep.
So pretty interesting. It's a great thing to lie about because you can't see it.
Well, exactly. And that's my point, is that that nothing is verifiable anymore that they want you to believe, right? It's like all these things that you can do for yourself and find out that you mix baking soda and vinegar together, or put Coke and Mentos together. It's like, you can do this stuff in your house and it really happens. But when it comes to this kind of stuff, it's like, now you just got to take it on faith. Yeah. No,
it's
like,
magic.
Here's an expert. Here's an expert who's getting paid like, $200,000 a year to tell you things that, you don't have an electron microscope. How would you know? You don't have that background. How would you know? You're not allowed to believe anything on the basis of the experiments that you can do. It's like somebody else always knows better and so on.
Why aren't electron microscopes, like all technology, why aren't they more readily available for people to use?
I don't have an electron microscope. I have quite a few microscopes though. I think electron microscopes, it's just like they're certainly available. You can buy them on eBay. There's lots of cool stuff that you can buy on eBay.
But it just
turns out that the main reason why you don't see people having these things more frequently is because you have to do all the experiments under vacuum. Like, you need a really hard vacuum, like 10 to the minus, I don't know, at least 6, 7, 8 torr, something like that. It's really, really low vacuum, down to like billionths of an atmosphere before you're going to be able to see what you're doing, that kind of stuff. So there's some weird requirements to pull this off. It's not like you just stick something under a normal optical microscope. But nevertheless,
they always say they have to treat it with a million different treatments. And by the time
they have to be conductive. You have to put a conductive layer on top of whatever it is, because the electrons are, otherwise your thing turns into a capacitor and the electrons will get steered away. That kind of stuff. I don't know. I mean, do I really know any of this at all? No, I really don't. But
I wonder if they are even real, that they really do something, because we know that the cell, by the time it gets under an electron microscope, is nothing like it was in the body. Nothing. They want to mask you like a criminal.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
You can have my vaccination. You can have the change that it brings.
All right. We have a live listener who just sent me a message. Critical Sinker is listening live. Thank you, Critical Sinker. It is Monday, September 19th, 2022. It's always great to have a PhD to talk to, because I have a PhD in fakeology, but that's about it. And Rolt has a PhD in mechanical engineering, which is fantastic. And
tremendous waste of time.
Well, we were told that the experts that saw the demolition of the World Trade Centers, the best mechanical engineers, were confirming that the imagery we saw could happen. You could crash a plane into the top third of the towers, and because of the structural integrity is weakened, you could have a pancake collapse in 9 and 11 seconds respectively. They said that could happen. So as a mechanical engineer, have you ever looked at that and thought, yes, that could easily happen in as we are told in a video?
We were talking about this just a little bit yesterday, but about Building 7. But if you have something that's raised above the ground, there's a certain amount of gravitational potential energy, right? So if I drop my bowling ball towards the ground, there's only a certain amount of velocity that it's going to achieve if there's nothing resisting it, right? And so at the point that you have the building having to pancake, like, in other words, like, destroy the structure below it, well, guess what? That you can't have something accelerating at free fall and doing work at the same time, you know? So these are some relatively serious problems. With that whole theory, I don't think it makes any sense at all. From my perspective, it's like one of the easiest and most compelling ways to understand like what happened on 9/11 is actually just through straight energy analysis. If you go and figure out how much energy did it take to create the volumes of dust that were calculated or measured to exist after the collapse, basically like all this concrete was like turned in, tremendous amounts of concrete turned into dust. The thing is, like, there isn't enough gravitational potential energy to break the concrete into that dust.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, just things like that. So there had to be extra energy sources in here. The whole thing, like, where, oh, jet fuel can't burn, can't melt steel beams. That's kind of a misnomer. I think that's kind of that's one of those things that makes a lot of people look idiotic. It's absolutely possible if you have a well-fed oxygen jet fuel fire, you can absolutely melt stuff. How do you think people have been melting steel for like thousands of years? Cast iron for at least 1,000 years. Where's that coming from? You're doing that with like charcoal and coal. And believe me,
doesn't have a high enough heat burn rate.
That's totally not true. It's absolutely, I could take jet fuel in my shop and melt steel with it. No problem. It's absolutely not. That's not a thing. With a slow moving oxygen starved fire, absolutely true that you're never going to achieve the temperatures that you need to melt the steel. That's not going to happen. All you got to look up is what's called an adiabatic flame temperature, and you can look up for kerosene or what is essentially the same as Jet A. And you can see that the adiabatic flame temperature for kerosene, stoichiometric kerosene mixtures, is higher than the melting point of steel. But that doesn't mean that fire was hot enough to melt those steel beams. It doesn't. not saying that. I'm just saying that claim is basically not true. People have been melting steel and iron and stuff like that with basic carbon fires for a really, really long time. So,
I'm not sure I agree with that. If you have any links to that, I'll look at it. But I think that I believe that argument.
Yeah,
I believe the argument that they could not get hot enough. But again, it's a red herring for what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
According to my official belief system.
Yeah. People just get pulled down like these kind of things. And that's one that I remember the first time I ever heard it. Basically, I don't know if you're aware of this, but basically, like if you're riding in a jet plane, the temperature of the combustion gases that are going over the turbine blades are hotter than the melting point of the turbine blades. And the way that those blades are prevented from melting is actually through a technique that's called film cooling. Basically, there's little pintles of there's holes on the front edges of the first and second, maybe third stages, if you have a third stage turbine, where the compressed gas that's uncombusted gas from the compressor stages is actually fed up through those. It is not fed through the combustor, but it's actually run through the engine, and then basically that compressed gas comes out through the front edges of those blades to keep a very, very thin film of cool air around them, so that as the hot combustion gases go over it, it doesn't melt the blade. So, I mean, like, that's a real thing. It's been going on, like, basically all the guys who are developing engines at, Rolls-Royce and General Electric and stuff like that, there's absolutely no way you would have jet engines working the way they do without that kind of technology to prevent the blades from melting. And those things are actually made out of, like, high-temperature melt, high nickels super alloys, which have higher melting temperatures than steel. So, yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah, I don't believe that, though. I just don't believe that Jet A fuel in any mixture can melt steel. Otherwise, what do they use to make molten steel in the steel plant down the lake from my nuclear power plant?
You can melt steel in like a cupola furnace, basically just using like literally like charcoal plus oxygen is hot enough.
You gotta get the right. But it doesn't, with 9/11, it doesn't matter, because if there were no planes, because planes don't fly at that level, etc., then therefore there's no jet fuel, therefore there's no fire, therefore that's not what happened. That's the way I look at it. You just have to follow a string of logic, so not a problem figuring it out.
But yeah, burning office furniture did not do it either. Yeah.
No. Did you ever watch the movie September Clues?
I ask you that?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I don't think I ever saw it. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I just turned on my Bluetooth. Can you repeat that?
No, I was just saying, like, I heard of it, but I don't believe I ever saw it.
Oh, okay. Well, have a look. It's on fakotube.com. I actually promoted it because it keeps getting deleted off YouTube. And in the last week, since 9/11 of this year, it's had 7,000 more views, because I can count the views since I have a real video site that I can really measure. So it's got a lot more views. But yeah, have a peek at it. Anytime I listen to guys like Richard Gage, the so-called 9/11 truth building World Trade Center deconstructionists, I just ask, well, you've never watched September Clues, so... more proof that you're just not telling the truth.
Yeah.
About what an alternative theory could be.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so okay, hopefully we answered more of your questions. So anything else?
Oh, that's good stuff. Yeah, like I say, I should probably jump here. Roll test to bolt, that's exactly right. Yeah. Actually, I just looked it up right here. Adiabatic flame temperature of kerosene in air is 3,801 degrees Fahrenheit. So,
adiabatic.
Adiabatic. In other words, without heat transfer. So, that's just
what is the melting point?
Melting point of steel, if I remember right, is around 2,700 or 2,900. I can actually look that up to you. Just one second. Steel melting. Fahrenheit. Well, actually, that's curious. It's actually lower than iron. It's it says depending on alloy, it's between 2370 and 2800 Fahrenheit. So when I said 27 or 29, I'm kind of like in the right ballpark. Yeah. Yeah. So
adiabatic burning.
Yeah. Adiabatic just is a it just means like you're not adding heat nor taking heat out. It's like if you were burning in a way such that there's no transfer of heat out of the stuff that you're burning. That's how hot the flame gets. It's essentially a way of characterizing how hot the flame is. So okay. Anyway,
well, yeah, I think after all this research, I would have heard that.
If anybody ever used like a oxyacetylene torch or something along those lines, obviously, like, you know, you can weld with acetylene, and that's just, you know, just another hydrocarbon. And the temperatures of that are up at like 6,000 degrees. And I know that you can also do oxypropane. I should try to find like what the temperature of that is, oxypropane. But the temperatures of when you're burning in oxygen are always higher than like when you're burning in air, because you don't have to bring along so much non-reactive stuff for the ride, right? So like if you're burning nitrogen, if you're burning air, it's like it's 78% nitrogen, and so most of the gas that's actually getting, you know, most of your oxidizing mixture is actually a non-reactive species. And so
we know that if there was a plane, if there was jet fuel.
Yeah.
Adiabatic temperature is the temperature reached by a flame under ideal conditions.
There's no way
the Twin Towers would have been ideal.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. You wouldn't have black smoke. That means that you've starved yourself for fuel or for oxygen, you know. So
you would need constant volume and constant pressure. Those are the two types of adiabatic flame temperature. There's no way you could have constant volume, because the volume would have just dissipated fast, and constant pressure. But the other thing is, there's no way that the towers could have collapsed in 9 and 11 seconds by crushing with the pancake all those floors below. It just wouldn't have happened. If it did, if anything collapsed, it probably wouldn't have collapsed more than 2 or 3 floors at the most.
Yeah.
And it would have just...
Do you remember the Harley guy?
Oh, yeah. He was another media...
totally explained how it happened.
Yeah, remember? That's the John LeBond's favorite clip.
Yeah,
John, are you familiar with johnlebond.com?
I think he has a paywall, if I remember right.
Yeah,
yeah, he's one of those guys. Okay, yeah, I kind of like I'm aware, but yeah, I don't think I've.
What's your take on paywalls?
Well, I mean, like, I think people are entitled to make a living however they can. You know, I think it's totally fine. I don't have, like, I don't think it's a moral problem, but I do think it's a,
do you think
it cuts down on my interest in, oftentimes it takes me a while of using a website before I feel like donating to the people. And so until I see like, okay, this looks like it's going to be continual value, I'll throw some money in the jar kind of thing. It's like I might not get there with guys who have like a pretty steep paywall.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I like to leave it open. I think people should just value it for what they do. That's why I have mine, and it may not be as successful as his, but I'm still being true to the way I believe. So if people have no money, then that's fine. They should still have access to all the info. Anyway.
Yeah.
It also just makes it easier for me that I don't have to perform like a monkey every month. If I go quiet, then I can just, I'm not worried. I'm not paying, you're not paying it forward necessarily.
Right.
So that's the way I look at it. I just leave it wide open. You do whatever works for you. And I think it's the best way.
Oh, right on, right on. Yeah, well, hey, I'm going to jump here, but it's really been fun.
Nice chatting with you.
Yeah, we'll look forward to doing it again here before too long.
Yeah, come anytime. There's a lot of great talkers on the audio chat, so you'll find them here.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I'm happy. I just thought I was like I say, this whole thing started with me just thinking I was going to get like approved to use your Discord channel.
Well, I know. See what happens. I have to monitor it because people do come in, and as a moderator, I have to approve them. We just do a quick voice verification. Most people don't want to talk. I get it. They're just here to see.
Yeah.
But there's not a hell of a lot here in the text. But yeah, please upload those letters. And we never even talked about Alfred Schaefer. Come back next time.
Okay, just yeah, we can talk about that too. Yeah.
Because are you familiar with Ernst Zundel?
Yeah, I know the name. I don't know his work. I know he was like a German guy who ended up in Canada somehow, and then he went to prison or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there was a trial.
Two of them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So.
And they were all. I would say now, they were both communitarian trials.
Is that right?
I really get that feeling now that I know what communitarianism is. When you talk about human rights, it's very hard to prove any kind of damages. And that's what courts are all about in our North American system. So they had a really hard time finding anything to charge him with because he wasn't really inflicting any property damage anywhere. As a matter of fact, the only property damage that was ever inflicted in his case was somebody firebombed his house in downtown Toronto.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And so the thing is that, and as you can see, we had to put that fire out, and consequently, the fire department received damages from having to put his
fire really
out, you know.
But hate speech really doesn't have a victim.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And it's really hard to prove damage.
Yeah. I mean,
if you're mean to somebody, you know, if you're mean to somebody, how do you measure any kind of damage? How can we measure any damage? It's ridiculous. It's stupid, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But so we'll have to go down that rabbit hole.
That'd be an interesting one. I can dig up the letters. I'm interested in like corresponding with people who you're not supposed to write to and stuff like that. I don't necessarily agree with what they have to say.
How about Ted Bundy? You got anything on him?
No. Yeah. No, it never went down that road. Yeah. So
another fictional character.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back and make sure you post those things. I'll watch for them.
Yeah, I'll dig around and see if I can't find those here pretty quick.
All right, thanks, Roll. All right, the best.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks.